everyone. I'm Grace.
And I'm Zoe,
the Dead Language Ladies. Today's episode is about noun cases as personalities. Zoe, what is a noun case?
So in many ancient languages and some modern languages, nouns have cases to signify what function they have in a sentence. So for example, there's nominative for the subject of a verb, accusative would be direct object, and so on. I know this sounds really dry, but I'm actually really excited for this episode because it's a little silly. And even if you don't fully understand noun cases as they work in dead languages, or if you do, either way, this will be super fun. So we're going to talk about what these cases are in terms of Greek and Latin. That's what our specialties are. That's where we're going to start. So What's the first one, Grace, that you always learn?
Nominative. Always. That's the as Zoe just said, the subject of the sentence, kind of the main action. Then there's the genitive case, which both Greek and Latin have the genitive case, and it can take a few different functions, but its main one is possession. So kind of a vestige of this in English is how we have like apostrophe S, you know, like Zoe's headphones or something like that, to show that they belong to someone. In a case system, they put that into the genitive case.
So then we have dative, which is in both Greek and Latin, but they can take on different functions depending on whether the language has ablative, for instance, as Latin does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So dative is essentially to, for, by, those kinds of prepositions that we use in English. It is contained in the noun and has a different ending to show that it's doing that in the sentence.
Yeah, exactly. So after dative, there's the accusative, which can also go with some prepositions to talk about especially movement towards something. But most often the accusative is the direct object, so the thing that's receiving the action of the verb.
And then there's vocative, which is an address. So for example, in the first line of the Odyssey, when we address the muse to sing, that word muse would be in vocative case.
Exactly. And then different languages have, you know, more cases than that. Like for example, Latin has the ablative case, which is sometimes affectionately called the junk case, because it has what really feels like hundreds, it's not that many, but when you're learning Latin, it feels like hundreds of different random uses that have all been kind of shoehorned into the ablative case. Like for example, there's the ablative of price, the ablative of comparison, ablative of separation, all these different kind of seemingly random uses.
And an interesting thing about these cases is that, as Grace said, Greek and Latin, for example, have slightly different amounts, but in Proto-Indo-European, which is the ancestor sort of common language of such languages like Greek and Latin and others, there's actually 8 cases, and 3 of them, instrumental, ablative, which we do see in Latin, but we don't get in Greek, and then locative, sometimes get sort of subsumed with the powers of the dative. But we'll get into all that as we run through what personalities each of these noun cases has, and we'll talk about which one is our favorite and which one we think we're most like. So let's get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Nominative. What do you think about that case?
I mean, like the nominative is the protagonist, really. Like it's the nominative has a strong personality. Star of the show, loves the spotlight, wants to be heard and seen, in my opinion.
That was a little bit more negative than what I was thinking. I had it sort of like the nominative is the leader. They're reliable. They're even uncomplicated. And I mean that because, you know, when you're translating a sentence, you find her right away, or him, the nominative, mm-hmm. or it for neuter nouns. So you find the nominative right away. And even when they have a form that's slightly different from, let's say, the accusative, it's the original. It feels like the nucleus of the word.
It is. I mean, if you want to look up, you know, the meaning of a word in the dictionary, you always go for the nominative. That's how it's listed. I mean, the nominative, I think nucleus is actually a really good way to describe it, because you're right. It's kind of the core of the sentence. And like when I was learning Greek and Latin, you know, when you're first kind of figuring out how to translate these complicated sentences with the weird syntax and grammar, it's like, okay, like just look for the nominative, like let it center you.
Yeah. So there is some kind of anchor mm-hmm. in the nominative. They're very reliable that way. They do stand out. They do try to draw attention, which is a little bit, you know, presumptuous, I guess, of them. But they're reliable. I don't know if they're like my favorite. I won't say which one it is, but it is, yeah, I don't know. Nominative is the core of all sentences. It's what you start with usually in languages that don't have a flexible word order, and they dictate who's doing the action. So,
And they also,
in many ways, it's all about them.
They are the most simplistic in terms of the use of the case, right? Like there's nominative subject and nominative predicate, and that's it.
Yeah. I did say uncomplicated.
Yeah.
They're uncomplicated. You don't really have to worry with them. And that's nice. I feel like nominative is a nice friend.
Nominative is a nice friend that you can call and you know, like, they're always, you know, going to be down to do whatever, you know, like they're going to be down to, you know, have a phone call with you whenever you need them.
And they get things done. Mm-hmm. They do.
Mm-hmm.
In a direct kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think nominative is settled because it does have very simple functions.
Mm-hmm.
They're very important, almost essential, but we need to move on. So genitive. I mean, it's funny that the dative has, and like the dative took on the instrumental, ablative, and locative functions of cases, whereas the genitive, which does have a lot of uses, and depending on which ancient language you're studying, it can have a lot more or less. But usually I wouldn't call it a catch-all case, but it's just very flexible in terms of what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of considered it a case that it holds everything. It's very complex. I was thinking she contains multitudes, that kind mm-hmm. of phrase.
Mm-hmm.
She does feel very womanly. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Even sexy. I don't know if I can say that about a noun case, but I just did. Because she's possessive, you know, she knows what she owns. There's also the whole part of a whole thing, which mm-hmm. I feel like is very womanly. Like we produce almost
mm-hmm.
out of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think about the genitive.
I was going to say, yeah, the genitive, like oftentimes is really kind of like glue holding together super complicated phrases. Like you can get, you know, strings of like, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 genitives all creating like one noun phrase in a way that like, you know, you just can't do with the other cases. It's very social. The genitive is like a social butterfly. Like I agree. There's something like inherently very feminine about it. I can't really put my finger on it, but like I sort of picture the genitive as like this little like extrovert social butterfly, like, you know, she knows everyone.
She has a lot of depth to mm-hmm. her still,
because mm-hmm.
she's super complicated. So mm-hmm. there is a kind of inner world to her that the other cases don't always seem to have. They seem very external, but she carries a lot.
Exactly. It's like she's simultaneously like very outward focused in that she interacts with a lot of other parts of the sentence, but also like within her, there's so many layers.
Yeah. I love the genitive.
I do too.
I have to say, she's also quite easy to find usually. And I always tend to like the case endings of the genitive.
Hmm.
Like I'm thinking in Greek, I just love seeing like an mm-hmm. eta sigma at mm-hmm. the end. Oh, I don't know why. I just look, maybe because it's obvious. And I look at it, I'm like, ah, the genitive, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're doing. I know what's going on in the sentence now.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Should we move on to the dative?
Let's move on to the dative. The dative, I feel, is social and extroverted in a different way than I see the genitive. Because the dative, it's often like, so as you mentioned earlier, the dative, right, means like two or four, sort of indirect object is a very common case use for the dative. But it can also have a lot of different functions, sometimes agency, things like that. And I feel like the dative can sometimes force its way into a sentence where it's maybe not necessarily needed or wanted. I guess I feel like the dative is less organic.
I did put there in my notes that dative is a kind of giver and a taker. So mm-hmm. things are very transactional for the dative, which exactly. is different from the genitive. The genitive gives freely. It doesn't want anything in return.
No.
Whereas the dative seems to be a part of the transaction. It wants to get in on the nominative accusative action,
mm-hmm.
Kind of third wheeling in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're also trying to do too much. Like the dative obviously has a lot of potential to do a lot of actions. It's very skilled in that way. It can take on the other cases like ablative, locative, instrumental that you find in Latin, for example, the ablative, or in Proto-Indo-European, you find instrumental, ablative, locative.
Mm-hmm.
In Sanskrit, you find many of these. So dative in Greek, for instance, fully realizes its potential mm-hmm. and takes on all of these cases and these powers. But it seems to almost be doing too much because then it's doing all of these things, but you almost don't even know what it's doing
mm-hmm.
because it's hard to differentiate because they all now have the same case ending. I mean, sometimes they did in the past too when it's like when they're separated, but now you really don't know because you just blanket it all under dative.
Exactly. It's like, it feels like when you take on so many projects that you feel like you can't even work on any one of them because you just have so much to do. That's what it feels like the dative is. It's almost like having a sort of identity crisis, it seems to me.
Yeah, you can't please everyone, dative.
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Can't.
And if you take on all these roles, you're bound to displease someone. So it's better exactly. if you just stay in your lane, 2-4, and we like it.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads us into the next three cases, which are all subsumed into the dative in ancient Greek, but in other ancient languages, they're separate. So we're going to start with instrumental. This sounds exactly like what it does, which is an instrument, usually in a sentence. So if someone's using a sword to stab someone, the sword would be in the instrumental case, usually like tools and stuff and weapons. I think instrumental, and maybe this is my bias of the word instrumental, but I feel like it's very beautiful. It's not always practical because it only really carries that one function, but they're helpful. They try and they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what you think about it.
I agree. I think it's a aesthetically pleasing simplicity. It's like it feels balanced to me. It knows what it is, you know? It has a clear...
And that's important. Self-awareness.
Yes, yes. Self-aware, uncomplicated. You know what you're going to get. It's like honesty, openness, you know? There's beauty in that.
But it is a side case. It's mm-hmm. not the center of attention. It's not trying to get attention, really.
No.
I mean, sometimes it can be a little flashy if it's with a sword or something interesting.
I mean, it's usually like communicating pretty essential information.
That's true. It's not necessarily, it's accompanying the verb
mm-hmm.
and the nominative and the accusative.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a fourth wheel
mm-hmm.
because it's being used for something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the thing. It's being used. That mm-hmm. I think at the heart of the instrumental, unfortunately, is this sort of sad reality that they're being used always,
mm-hmm.
even less than the indirect object. You would think dative 2-4 is, but that has more agency, I feel like, than the instrumental.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in the name itself. It's an instrument. It's being used to just ultimately further what the nominative and the accusative are doing, how they're interacting with each other. So it's really, but you need those supports. I mean, you can't fill out a sentence. You can't, have the Iliad unless you have swords, ultimately.
That's true. So they do sort of create that kind of backbone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that leads into the ablative, which we have already said is called the junk case,
mm-hmm.
which I think is an almost unfair title for it because it has a lot of those uses, but it's really important to remember it has that agency. Mm-hmm. It can be the star of the show when there's no nominative.
Yes.
And it can be the star of the show by doing the action of the verb. That's pretty crazy. Because we just said, oh, the nominative has to be there. Well, actually, there is one instance where it doesn't have to be there.
Right, when there's a passive verb. The person doing the action goes into the ablative case. So the ablative, it's almost like that person who like sits at the back of the classroom and never really talks, but it turns out that they're like actually crazy smart and like, you know what I mean? Like the ablative, it's almost like all this hidden potential.
That's a really good metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely have a hidden potential. I sort of respect the ablative a lot because it's very thrifty. It can do a lot. It doesn't have to be an agent. It can also do a bunch of other things
mm-hmm.
That the other cases don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it just picks up the slack. It gets the job done. I think that's why it's in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Because Latin needs to get the job done half the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you need the ablative. And it can be a little sneaky, I think, like coming in and being the agent all of a sudden in a passive verb
mm-hmm.
is sort of sneaky, but also mm-hmm. maybe shy. Maybe sneaky is a little bit too derogatory. Like it's a sort of shy case. It comes out,
mm-hmm.
Quite suddenly. Oh, okay. Ablative doing some work here.
Yeah. And I mean, in Latin, the ablative case subsumes the function of the instrumental. So it's sort of, everything we just said about the instrumental cases, to a certain extent, arguably applicable to the ablative case here too.
I think definitely some of those qualities, although once the ablative does take on, because it has all these other uses,
yeah,
the kind of simplicity of the instrumental personality gets a little bit washed away with all the other functions that this ablative now does,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which I think is why it's important to differentiate. Obviously, in different points of history, language changes, and so these personalities change when that happens. But we're trying to differentiate all times and history of the cases
in one podcast episode.
In one podcast episode, we're making a time. So mm-hmm. let's move on to locative briefly. It's again, like instrumental, in the name, locative, location. You're usually talking about like going home is a really good example. It's used a lot. Like, okay, now mm-hmm. we're going home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, home's going to be in the locative. I like it. It says what it means. It even more so than the instrumental. I think instrumental is a little bit more vague than the locative.
Mm-hmm.
If it wants something, it goes and gets it, and it's always on the move. It's going. And it's helpful in a sentence. You're like, okay, yeah, locative, move
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm. I like the locative because I feel like it just doesn't mess around, Like, okay, we're not using prepositions, we're just going to cut right to the chase and get where we need to go, ultimately.
So in the interest of time, I'm going to move us to a really big, important case,
mm-hmm.
the accusative.
Yes.
The accusative, again, like we've been saying, is the direct object of a verb. So it has this sort of intimate relationship with the nominative.
Mm-hmm.
And there are instances where the nominative and accusative look the same.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have a closer relationship than the other cases. I think it's a sort of strong, bold case. It's not as bold as the nominative, but it can really steal the show. Having said that, it's been accused, if you will, of being an object and therefore being controlled. So I think there is that aspect where the nominative never has that, but right. The accusative does.
Right. Right. I think it's very tempting to view the accusative as literally a passive object, right? It's being acted upon by the verb. But it also has a very, I think, strong sense of self. The accusative Agreed. Knows what it is, and it's not apologetic about it.
And it really does hold such a important place in the sentence. You almost always need an accusative.
Right. And you don't really know what's going on. The accusative is like the cornerstone that brings it all together.
The foundation in some ways.
Exactly.
Like you don't always need it. Like you can say he runs. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of a bare sentence. It actually doesn't really fill it out. Like if it has an accusative.
Right. He runs a race. Now we have a story.
Oof, now we have a story. Exactly. Without the accusative. Oh, that's good. Without the accusative, you don't have a story.
Precisely.
You can't really tell. You can't really paint the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And so accusatives are sort of those underrated cases that are reliable, but also filled with information, bold, but subtle at the same time, and just really the rock that a sentence full of meaning stands upon.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
So now we get to vocative. This case, so like we said, it's an address, right? Sing muse, sing goddess mm-hmm. of this, and that muse or goddess will be in the vocative. It can look like a nominative sometimes, but sometimes it looks a little different. It has a special little ending, which I always love, and the accents are a little different. Like things just get different. And I think that's very fitting for evocative, which is trying to address someone, trying to sort of call them out. I think they're like the vocative is majestic, but at the same time eccentric because of that kind of, you know, change in the ending. But it's majestic. It doesn't appear all the time, but when it does, it pulls your attention towards it and to someone else, spotlights them. You just won't miss the vocative because it's so unique. It feels unique as a case.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you see it as very majestic, which I completely agree. But my first instinct was like, it's very personal. It's familiar. You know, it's like, it's intimate in a way.
I wrote down the word intimate, but not aggressive and a little bit flirty.
Ooh, yes.
I feel like it's flirty. Like genitive is sexy. Vocative is flirty. It's mm-hmm. direct and forward because it's addressing you, but not in an overwhelming way.
No, it's brief. It's very brief.
And you don't get it a lot. So,
right.
You know, when it does come around, you have to treasure it.
You pay attention.
The question is, after this, what is our favorite case? Do you have an answer?
I do have an answer. And I think all the cases, really, you can make a case for them being the best. I think for me, my favorite case, honestly, is the locative.
Whoa, I was not expecting that.
And I mean, like, to a certain extent, that's just kind of a gut instinct, like something about it. I've just always sort of appreciated and enjoyed. I think, you know, I mean, from like a historical linguistics point of view, it is interesting the way that the locative is kind of fossilized in Greek and Latin. And like, you know, only certain words have a locative, not all words can go into the locative case. So it is like interesting to think about from a historical perspective. But I also have always sort of appreciated the, I guess, colloquial nature of it and the way that it feels like, you know, even when you see it in kind of, you know, artful pieces of literature, the locative always feels to me like very chatty, you know, very much like the way that just normal people talk to each other.
I love that.
And so for that reason, like, it's always just, every time I see it, I'm drawn to it for some reason, more than the other cases.
That's a beautiful explanation.
Thank you. And your favorite case?
I have to say genitive, if it wasn't obvious earlier.
It was obvious earlier.
I love this case. Yeah, she's very sexy. She's complex, contains multitudes. I also feel like in terms of when I'm reading a sentence, the genitive just pops out. Like, mm-hmm. I always encounter it. I always find it. I enjoy also the possessive. And I think the coolest thing that I learned in studying historical linguistics is that English does retain a genitive case, because everyone says, you know, oh, German has cases, but, like, you know, English used to, but it doesn't anymore. Wrong. English does have a case, and obviously it's multiple, nominative, and then it has genitive. And the only, and in German, the genitive often, it can change, but it changes the ending, and it retained in English the S, mm-hmm. through analogy and all these other processes that we're not going to get into. And the only reason we have an apostrophe is to differentiate whether we're saying a plural noun or a possessive noun. And what I found really funny about that is because, and this is totally, like, wrong of me, but I thought for some reason that the apostrophe S was some kind of contraction because of, you know, words like don't has an N apostrophe T. And that's my, like, you know, stupid human brain being like, oh, you know, apostrophe, like, contraction. So apostrophe S must be some kind of contraction, but I never stopped to think about what that might be. And then when I learned, oh, we just put the apostrophe in written language, because obviously our society is so heavily focused on the written word and not mm-hmm. the oral sound. So that's why we have the apostrophe.
But that's so
otherwise it wouldn't be there. It would just be an S.
That makes sense. And so then you think,
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Once I learned, I thought about English so differently. And I was sort of proud that we retained the genitive. And I was like, maybe mm-hmm. that's why I like it. Because in English, when I'm writing, the genitive comes up so much, so helpful. You could say of and use a preposition, but you don't have to. Mm-hmm. You can use the apostrophe S. So I think that's why I feel this connection to the genitive. And obviously in ancient Greek and Latin and other ones, for some reason, like, oh, the plural genitive in Greek on, like, ugh. That looks, I don't know why, I just like looking at it. Like, I always love those endings. Whereas sometimes, like, mm-hmm. the dative, I'm like, that's, like, so gross with the little, like, little iota sort of, like, subscript. Mm-hmm. Ugh, too mm-hmm. messy. It's like the, and then always a circumflex appears somehow. Mm-hmm. Lovely. Mm-hmm. So,
the genitive is, again, very aesthetically
love the genitive.
Losing. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally never really interrogated the existence of the apostrophe S.
We take it for granted.
We totally do.
We just think,
do.
Oh, that's something we do.
Yeah.
That's something we do. No, there's a reason behind it.
Huh. There you go.
So, yeah, that's some historical linguistics for you. Now, what case are we?
What case are we?
You go first.
I feel like at this phase in my life, I identify most with the ablative, just because of, like, what?
I wasn't expecting it again. I'm like, so you really like these, like, secondary dative cases?
I sort of do. Maybe it's because I learned Latin before I learned Greek, so I have, like, more of an affinity with that.
Appreciation, yeah.
But I feel like at this...
How do you feel about the junk case?
The junk case. I mean, I feel like I would prefer miscellaneous over junk.
I like that too.
Yeah. But I just feel like, you know, at this point in my life, like, sort of being a student, like, just got all these different things, all these different projects going on. Like, I sort of do, like, have an affinity. Like, I get it. I empathize with the ablative. Like, we're doing a lot. And, you know, some people will, look at that and say like, oh, that's a junk case. But like, no, I get it. It's we're busy. We're doing our best.
You're actually really thrifty and, have a lot of talents, actually.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. Much appreciated.
The defense of the ablative. So I had trouble with this because my love for genitive makes me want to be her. I want to be the genitive completely. I want to like contain multitudes. I want to do all this stuff. I'm a little bit possessive, so I have some of that genitive air. But at the end of the day, as much as I want to be all genitive, I'm a nominative. And I don't mean that in like a flashy kind of way. Like I want to be the center of attention because actually I don't like to be the center of attention, but I do like to be the person doing the action. And I like if there's a group project, I'm the person that's getting things done. I always have been. I just have I and then I like to tell stories, so I like to be the one in control. I think I'm a reliable person. I'm very organized. I can be very complicated, but I'm also in many ways uncomplicated. I have my views on things, and that's how it is. And I like to think I stand out in a good way sometimes. I like to stand out in a good way. I don't like to draw bad attention to myself, which I don't think the nominative always does. I think it's pretty like just straightforward and reliable and strong and yeah.
Think that's a great answer.
And that's all we have time for today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Dead Language Ladies.
And stay tuned for our next episode.
Wale.
Haide.